KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, we'll discuss the latest from the nation's capital, from ex-Trump aide Omarosa's newly released tape of President Trump allegedly expressing surprise over her being fired, to the ongoing Manafort trial. We'll talk about the news you need to know to jumpstart your week. And then at 9:30, we're going to discuss all things cosmic with astronomer Andrew Fracknoy, including NASA's launch on Sunday morning of the Parker Solar Probe, the first ever spacecraft to fly to the sun's corona, and the recent discovery of a miles-long underground lake on Mars. All that's coming up after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. From former White House aide Omarosa Manigault Newman's newly released tapes of President Trump allegedly expressing surprise over her being fired to the ongoing Manafort trial, and the latest news that FBI agent Peter Strzok has been fired over anti-Trump texts, we're going to discuss all the national political news you need to know, or we hope you need to know, in this opening half hour. Joining us to make sense of it all, Molly Ball, national political sport correspondent for Time and also CNN political analyst. Molly, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Great to be here. Thank you.
And let me also welcome Eugene Scott, political reporter for The Washington Post, who also joins us from the nation's capital. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And let me begin, Molly Ball, if I may, with you. I'd just like to get your sense from an analytic point of view, I suppose, of what went on this weekend. There was only about two dozen, at best, Unite the Right supporters who were there. I mean, quite a contrast to Charlottesville with all those torches. What do we do to infer from this?
Well, it does not seem like the alt-right benefited from last year's event. It seems that people are more reluctant, more loath to publicly affiliate with these white nationalists than they were last year when the turnout was much better. So if this was intended to be a show of continued strength, I don't think it sent that message. It also was largely peaceful. There was a heavy police presence that was much discussed here in Washington, but they did succeed in keeping the thousands of counter-protesters separate from the couple dozen, apparently, white nationalists, and there were no reports of violence or injuries. So, you know, the original Unite the Right rally a year ago was intended to bring the alt-right into the mainstream and unite them, unite the anti-Semites and racists with the broader conservative movement, but instead, I think what we've seen is a fracturing. As people either saw what happened or heard some of the alarming rhetoric from the organizers of Charlottesville and said, "No, thank you, I don't want to unite with this movement. At least not publicly."
And what about Eugene Scott, the president's reaction to all this? He was severely criticized for saying, "Well, they're, you know, bad people on both sides," and all the rest of that rhetoric. And he did send out a tweet. It was kind of a boilerplate tweet. Your thoughts about his response?
Yeah, in the president's tweet, he condemned all types of racism, which seemed to get the pushback that both sides also did as well, in part because the all types of racism comments seemed to suggest that there was racism happening on the left that was comparable to what was being done or communicated on the right from the Unite the Right protesters, I should say. It was an effort, I would guess, to appeal to many among his base who truly believe that there's discrimination against white people in this country comparable to, if not worse than, discrimination against minorities. And so in his tweet, the president seemed to communicate that he was not really backed down from his original take on last year's rally, and instead wanted to reaffirm his supporters that he saw this issue the same way that they do.
And let me also get your response, Eugene Scott. I know you wrote about Antifa in this morning's Washington Post, but I'm interested in hearing what you have to say about all this brouhaha that has erupted over comments by Omarosa Manigault Newman, who called the president a racist and a misogynist. He called her a lowlife and unintelligent. I mean, wondering what we're to make of this, particularly since she says there are tapes, she hasn't produced them, but tapes that the president says the N-word on, and she also did reveal a tape that the president seemed mystified by her being fired.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is really surprised by Omarosa's view that Trump is racist or uses slurs to describe people of color among minority communities, and perhaps some of the people who took her endorsement of him very seriously and looked to her as one who could validate that Trump is not racist, probably may be surprised by her turn of events. But no one who voted against Trump because of his views on race is surprised by this revelation. If anything, they are frustrated that Omarosa spent significant amounts of time trying to convince Americans, black people specifically, that Trump wasn't who she now says he actually is.
Well, Molly, what do you think about this in light of the fact that a lot of African Americans did not turn out to vote the way they did for President Obama in terms of Hillary Clinton's campaign? And now you've got the president describing a number of black people as being unintelligent, LeBron James and now Omarosa. It must be offensive to the black community, I would think.
Yeah, it's quite a coincidence that the Omarosa story, the LeBron James story you mentioned, and also Trump renewing his tweets about the NFL and the players kneeling and the decrying those protests, calling for those players, calling them ungrateful and stupid and saying that they should be suspended without pay. This all happens to coincide with the anniversary of Charlottesville and this week's march and protests. You know, as Eugene said, this wasn't too much of a surprise to a lot of people in minority communities. Have they become angrier or more motivated since the 2016 election to come out and vote for Democratic candidates or vote against Republicans and Trump? I don't know. We've seen mixed evidence on that. You know, all we really have to work with so far are primaries and special elections, neither of which are necessarily representative of midterm general election turnout. And in a few isolated cases, Doug Jones' special election in Alabama, Stacey Abrams' Democratic primary win in Georgia, we have seen large swells of African-American turnout. And it should be said that both of those candidates also put a lot of money and effort and attention into organizing communities of color. So that didn't just happen on its own. But overall, we have not seen the kind of groundswell among voters of color that we've seen with women voters. Universally, in these special elections, in these primaries, we're seeing women disproportionately coming out to send a message to Trump, and college-educated women in particular have swung massively in favor of Democrats and are quite motivated. I don't think we know for sure yet whether that effect is also going to hold with Black and Latino and other minority voters.
We're talking with Molly Ball, who is national political correspondent for Time and also CNN political analyst, and Eugene Scott, who is political reporter for The Washington Post. I want to give out our phone number. This is only a half-hour segment, so if you want to weigh in on any of the issues that we're covering, we are going to talk about the Manafort trial and the Mueller investigation. If you have thoughts also about Omarosa and what has come out most recently in conjunction with tapes that are alleged, they've been alleged by others like Tom Arnold to exist with Trump using the N-word, and thoughts about the effect of that, or your thoughts in retrospect with respect to what went on, I hate to call it the anniversary, but it was an anniversary of the first year of Charlottesville in Lafayette Park in D.C., with only about two dozen from the right uniting against really hundreds of those who were against them, or in Charlottesville. We do want to hear from you. And any questions or comments are welcome. Let me give you our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. Again, join us at 866-733-6786 and join us now. You can do that by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. And let me go back to the Manafort trial with you, Molly Ball. Where are we now, and where do we seem to be headed?
Well, there The Manafort trial has been going on for about 2 weeks. On Friday, the prosecution nearly reached the end of its case. They're expected to rest their case today. We had the dramatic testimony of Rick Gates, Manafort's former right-hand man, who admitted that he also engaged in many of the crimes that Manafort's accused of and was also stealing money from the operation that they were running. What we've heard so far is the prosecution's case. So it has been mostly evidence against Paul Manafort. The defense obviously has had the opportunity to question Rick Gates and to call his judgment into question. And it does appear that their main strategy is going to be to contend to the jury that Gates can't be trusted as a witness because of the lies that he's already admitted to. But what we're going to see this week after the prosecution rests is whether there's more to the defense case than that, whether they have any witnesses they're going to be able to call, whether there is any exculpatory evidence that would go against the many, many hours that the jury has been exposed to of forensic accounting and documents and all kinds of paper trail attesting to these allegations of tax avoidance.
And Eugene Scott, where do we stand? Maybe you can update us on the Mueller investigation. There's supposed to be more focus or lasering in now on Roger Scott, but also you have, proverbial statements by Rudy Giuliani, which go against the president's attorney, which go against statements he said earlier about the Flynn investigation and James Comey. Can you update us?
We know that this morning, I believe, a federal district judge upheld Robert Mueller's appointment and authority in the special counsel case, which was telling and really a blow, perhaps, to Trump and his conservative side's desire to see this investigation and or perhaps Mueller removed from it. It appears that things will continue to go forward as is, despite Trump's constant invoking of the witch hunt nature of this investigation that he and his supporters have bought into. But the overwhelming majority of the American public, or at least the majority, if not overwhelming, do want to see what this investigation can reveal and have it play out in a normal time, as they are concerned about ongoing interference from Russia in U.S. elections moving forward this fall, and select individuals such as Roger Stone perhaps being involved in a way that needs to be handled appropriately.
Well, some of Stone's people are questioning the whole legitimacy of the Mueller investigation, trying to bring the spotlight back into that question of legitimacy. But let me bring a caller in here. And Merrill Lee, let me begin with you. Good morning. Merrill Lee, I'm sorry.
Hi.
Yeah.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, please. You're on the
Hi.
Air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I have a concern about the effect this administration is having on kids. If my kids were to do any name-calling in their classes, they actually get reprimanded in their school. But with this administration, one way of shaming the people that they don't like or they disagree with seems to be to give them all sorts of names and really publicly disgrace them. Isn't there any accountability for this action?
Well,
what is the effect?
I think it's a fair point. Molly Ball, it doesn't seem to necessarily be registering all that much on this administration, I mean, in terms of presidents' name-calling or others' name-calling.
Well, I actually think it has made quite an impression. I mean, something that I hear all the time, even from voters who like Trump, is that they don't approve of his behavior. They don't approve of his comportment. They don't approve of the constant insults and the intemperate tweets. There may be a hardcore of the base that does like these things, but it's actually quite common to meet, political or ideological allies of Trump who nonetheless disagree with his behavior. Now, so the accountability for that is merely political, right? Thanks to the First Amendment, there is no punishment for name calling under the law. But, people who are anguished enough by the president's behavior have the opportunity to vote against him when he is up for re-election, and that is the safeguard in our system for that kind of thing. It is the kind of thing that it's good that the caller brought it up, because this is the kind of thing that is wildly out of step out of the norm of what we would consider presidential behavior, to the point that Trump himself, in a tweet this morning, mocked the idea of acting "quote unquote" presidential. He put it in quotes with regard to him stooping to insult Omarosa, who he's now calling "wacky Omarosa," another nickname, another insult. But you know, this has become normal for this presidency. It certainly has not been the norm for any other presidency.
And what about when we're talking about norms, Eugene Scott, James Strzok has now been fired from the FBI. And that seems to be, I mean, there was talk about him being demoted and all kinds of other things, but he was actually let go. Your thoughts?
He absolutely was. And his lawyer is expressing great frustration because Strzok was, I believe, promised that he was not going to receive any disciplinary action beyond what was normal for his behavior in this agency. But we saw Trump tweet, take credit for his firing, which suggests that it was perhaps politically motivated, which is not a surprise to anyone who's paid significant attention to how Trump feels about Strzok and the investigation that he was a part of as a whole. Whether or not this is legal and will become the new norm, I'm sure will be unpacked within the next few weeks, if not longer. But it's not a huge surprise, I believe, to some people that Strzok was not going to be allowed to stay with the FBI if Trump had anything to do with it.
And let me bring on another of our callers. Mia joins us next. Mia, welcome. You're on the air.
Yes. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm calling because I'm just wondering about the role of reporters and journalists and the role of our media when interviewing people like Jason Kessler, the organizer of the Unite the Right in Charlottesville, and then actually the Lafayette Park rally where they're saying maybe 24 people showed up, because there was an interview by NPR host Noelle King yesterday where she interviewed Jason Kessler, and she failed to ask a single question about violence, and she also failed to ask him about Heather Hare's death. And you know, this is after he tweeted something really ugly about Heather Hare was a fat, disgusting communist. Communists have killed 94 million. Looks like it was payback to me. And I wonder if your panelists would talk about softball interviews of people and how there is a really big responsibility to expose some of these people. I understand journalists have to be neutral, but we need to really draw a bright, stark line about some of these people, and NPR failed in that responsibility yesterday, I feel.
Well, let me thank you for your call, Mia, and get some thoughts from Molly Ball on this. There's a lot of criticism of the media for trying to be, especially organizations like NPR, trying to be even-handed and journalistic and therefore not going to the heart of what might be taken as criticism, appropriate criticism.
Sure. I mean, I don't think you can find a profession that does more hand-wringing and soul-searching and constant constant consideration of whether we're doing our job correctly than journalism. And I can't speak to a particular interview, whether a particular question should have been asked of a particular subject. It's always easy to nitpick those things. But I do think, in general, it is very important that rather than ignore phenomena or individuals that we find unsavory, we tell the truth about them. And it isn't our job to expose or pass judgment. It's our job to tell the story to, you know, viewers or listeners or readers of our work, to tell a story that's true and allow them to understand it as best they can, and not to take sides in any of these fights.
What do you think about the Boston Globe coming out and organizing roughly about 100 newspapers to fight against what they're calling the fight against the free press from the Trump administration?
Well, I think that we can, as collectively as the media, band together to support our own, you know, our integrity, the First Amendment, and our place in the discourse. And that's totally appropriate. I think it has to be clear, though, that we're not taking a particular political side.
Let me bring another caller aboard. And Joe, that's you. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. It's always a pleasure to listen to Ms. Ball.
Thank you.
I think that the issue of why yesterday's event may have been small is that Frontline and ProPublica did an amazing job of finding out who some of these anarchists are and actually helping to get them fired. A major player from Northrop got fired, and the Marines fired one of their own. And the Charlottesville event, the Berkeley event, and the event in Orange County have started to put these people who are on the front lines as anarchists actually front and center to the press. And I have to compliment the press for doing, especially investigative reporting, for actually tempering and helping perhaps to make yesterday's event smaller, because I think the reverse has happened. I think the anarchists are going to start to be a little scared about their faces being seen, because everybody in the country is looking at this now, and almost any of these people can be identified eventually. So I want to thank all of the people out there in investigative reporting for doing such a good job to help perhaps temper this and top it down a little bit.
Joe, let me thank you for that call. Let me go right back to Eugene Scott on this. Well, first of all, Eugene Scott, I know you just, like I said, you just did a piece on Antifa. Are these all anarchists we're talking about here on either side? I mean, we've got white supremacists and Nazis and right wingers, and we've got people who are identified as anarchists, but not necessarily anarchists.
The diversity of, excuse me, the people who aligned with the rally yesterday, it's a bit broader than I think a lot of people understand, which is why it was called Unite the Right. And so the idea was to embrace people across the spectrum of perhaps, quite frankly, white nationalism or at least cultural anxiety to promote an idea that America's best days are behind us, and perhaps to try to get behind leaders and ideas and culture shapers who would return the country's direction to that moment. I don't put as much stock in the shaming process of participants in these types of events, because not appearing or showing up at a rally is not the same thing as not supporting those ideas. So the reality is that there are people who perhaps would be afraid to come out to the rally, knowing that it could cause them professional consequences or personal respect in their communities. But if they're still underground and supporting individuals and candidates and agendas that further what Jason Kessler was trying to do anyway, then the victory isn't as significant as we may think if we're going to measure it solely based on turnout.
Well, let me hear from you with seconds left, Molly Ball, on this.
Well, you know, I do think that that's an important point. And it can be argued that because of the president's seeming sanction, or at least not strong disapproval of events like the Charlottesville march, that to the supporters of Trump who follow him no matter what, it makes those kind of sentiments a little bit more acceptable, even if it's true that in large part because of the efforts of activists to shame people who do show their faces, those people experience.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you, Molly Ball. Thank you, Eugene Scott. I'm Michael Krasny.
Thank you.